This is the son of PCJ.
On shortwave, satellite, and the internet, this is Media Network Plus.
We begin today with an update on a story that we talked about last week. For the past few weeks now, interference against the BBC World Service, Voice of America, and Radio Australia has been appearing. Now, not against programs in Chinese, Uyghur, or Tibetan, or other languages spoken in China, but rather English language programs. And programs that are not even being targeted China, but even just being able to be picked up in China. The Association of International Broadcasting this week released a statement. It says, "The Association for International Broadcasting today condemned attempts that are being made to interfere with the broadcasts of international broadcasters on shortwave in the Asia region. English language broadcasts from the BBC World Service, Radio Australia, and The Voice of America beamed towards China are being deliberately interfered with by the jamming of a number of frequencies. Such jamming makes it difficult or sometimes impossible to listen to broadcasts that include news, current affairs, science, and entertainment. Research undertaken by the broadcasters and by independent monitors in the Asia region indicate that the source of the jamming is within the People's Republic of China. AIB condemns the latest interference to the broadcasts of the BBC, ABC Radio Australia, and The Voice of America," said Simon Spanwick, the chief executive of the Association for International Broadcasting. "Free access to information is a universal right, and this interference is preventing audiences based within China to hear news from outside the country. It comes at a time when China's own international broadcasters on radio and television are expanding rapidly in the world. They do not suffer attempts by other nations to silence them. AIB calls on China to cease its jamming activities. Broadcasts in Mandarin from broadcasters including the BBC, Radio Free Asia, and Voice of America have been interfered with for many years. This is the first time that English language services have been targeted in such a widespread way. The AIB has lodged protests with the Chinese Foreign Ministry and its missions in Canberra, London, and Washington, D.C. To find out more about these jamming activities, Joanna McCarthy contacted Simon Spanwick, who is the chief executive of the Association of International Broadcasting.
It appears to be quite wide. We've been talking to some monitors who keep an eye on the or an ear to the shortwave bands around Asia, and they say that it's certainly audible well outside China. So one imagines, even with the geographic scale of China itself, that this is right across the region.
So exactly how is it that these broadcasts are being disrupted?
It seems that it's the same way that shortwave broadcasts have been disrupted for the last 50, 60 years. Essentially what you do if you're trying to stop people listening to a program on shortwave is to transmit another audio feed on the same frequency. So if, for example, you're transmitting on a shortwave frequency of 17.78 megahertz, you simply put a transmitter on that same frequency and broadcast noise. What Chinese have done for a long time is actually broadcast Chinese folk music, a special composition known as the Fire Drake, which is fed to remote jamming transmitters by satellite, and that's well documented. What's happening in this case is that they're transmitting a different sort of noise. The aim is to simply make it so uncomfortable to listen to that people switch off and don't bother trying to listen to the program they wanted to get.
And it is indeed a very difficult sound to listen to. We've heard a sample ourselves. Who do you think is behind this?
It's difficult to say. Clearly, the research that broadcasters have undertaken and that we've looked at across using these monitors we've got across Asia, it seems to suggest that it is emanating from transmitter sites within mainland China. The exact location is slightly more tricky to identify, but it's certainly by doing different sorts of triangulations and things like that, you can work out a pretty good position of where these things are, and they are indeed in mainland China.
And are you willing to speculate what the motive might be?
It's difficult to know. When one country doesn't want broadcasts from another to be heard by its citizens, it resorts to this sort of thing. What's curious in this case is that the audiences for English language programming within China are much, much smaller than they would be for Mandarin language. So it begs the question as to why this is going on. We've seen lots of things happening this year. Earlier this year, for example, there were the stories about the New York Times and other U.S. news organizations that were apparently targeted by Chinese hackers. And when CNN, for example, ran a story about this, its international TV channel was blacked out when that report came on. So there is definitely a desire by China, I suppose, to stop certain information coming into the country.
Now, of course, you represent all international broadcasters. What action is the AIB taking on this?
Well, we've stirred up a bit of interest. We've issued a press release earlier this week that's been picked up by the trade and consumer press around the world, where we've lodged protests at the Chinese embassies here in London, in Washington, D.C., and in Canberra, to try and just put the point of view across that this isn't the right thing to do. And it comes at a time when China itself is expanding its own international radio and television services. They're going global on a big scale. They've got enormous budgets. And nobody is trying to stop them from making available information about what the Chinese government wants the rest of the world to hear. So there's got to be a level playing field. That's the position that the AIB has. There's a universal right to free and fair information and freedom of speech. And jamming is simply so contrary to that sort of notion that it can't be allowed to continue.
And have you had any response from China?
Not yet. Whether we will is only time will tell. But we've made the point and we're going to keep pushing the point as well.
That was Simon Spanwick, the chief executive of the Association of International Broadcasting, speaking with Radio Australia's Joanna McCarthy. And I'm sure that we will have an update on this story in the near future. You're listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International. We now continue our conversation with Andy Sennett. Last year, Andy Sennett retired from Radio Netherlands. He was the editor for the weblog Media Network. Before that, he was also the editor of the World Radio TV Handbook. Now, the conversation that we had was over 1 hour long. So those who listen to this program on a regular basis know that we've been bringing you part by part every so often. So we're going to do that again today. Now, this point in the conversation, we talked about the strange letters that come in from people around the world. What I mean by that is, for example, if we do a test transmission targeting China, only targeting China and one specific area, we could have letters coming from across the world saying, why didn't you tell us about this? Is there something you're trying to hide? Why didn't you make it public? Well, we actually did make it public, but the programming was in Chinese, so we only publicized it in Chinese. And Andy Sennett is certainly no stranger to this kind of comment.
Yeah, I mean, I've had the emails like that, you know, claiming that because we didn't announce something to somebody thousands of miles away from the area for which it was intended, you know, we're keeping secrets from them. You know, it's just a mentality which I don't understand, and frankly, I find, you know, as I get older, increasingly irritating.
In what year was it? Oh, it was in 2002, and China Radio International was sending a group from the English service, from head management to California in the United States, to meet a group of listeners that was organized by a DX group in the United States. And it was somewhere outside Los Angeles. And the then head of the English service, Li Ping, she said, oh yeah, we're going there for 1 week. They organized this big gathering for us and everything. And I said to her the day before she left to the airport with the other group, you're going to be surprised. And she said, what do you mean by that? I said, look, I'm not going to say anything more. Just when you get there, email me or we'll talk when you get back. But I'm just going to say, you're going to be surprised. Anyway, 2 weeks went by. She got back. And on a Monday morning, I saw her in the lift going up to the English language service. And she said, I said to her, how was the trip? And she said to me, it was interesting. And I said, oh, really? Do you want to go talk about it? She said, yes, I'd like to do that. And we go into her office. And she said, oh, she said, Keith, I felt as if we showed up with a group of people, less than 10. They travel, don't forget. People from CRI traveled halfway across the world with a room with 10 people. She said, it was like they opened up an insane hospital and had these people in the room. She said, we put out all these like trinkets from CRI and from China. She said, they felt it was like freebies for all. They just took everything.
She said
to me, you know, she said it was a good thing that none of the government top leadership went, because she says it was the most embarrassing, scary thing that she'd ever seen in her life. And she said to me, is this typical of our North American listeners on shortwave? And I said, go to another one and then we'll discuss that. She never did.
well, yes, Keith, but in fairness, I have to say I've been to a conference in North America organized by my good friends John Filiozzi and Rich Cuff. And yes, there were some strange people there, but there were a lot of very normal people and very interesting people who genuinely wanted to know about Radio Netherlands and about the World Radio TV Handbook and about, you know, things. They're not all like that, but I have to admit that it does tend to be the case that these are the people who would go to a shortwave meeting.
Well, the SWL Fest, Andy, I mean, I wouldn't put it into that category, but, you know, she said to me when they met this group of 10 people, Lin Xiaowen, who is the director general, the assistant deputy director general of the English Language Service, asked them, oh, how many shortwave listeners do you think, you know, we have here in the United States? And one of them said, oh, you have more than 50 million people that listen.
Oh, gracious me. Yeah, I mean, 50, well, just in a matter of coincidence, 50 million was a figure that Radio Netherlands used for years, claiming it, you know, it reached 50 million people worldwide. I never believed that. I always think it was a lot lower than that. But because what used to happen, we had a lot of partner stations, and partners stations such as public broadcasters. Now, these public broadcasters, if we asked them for their audience, they would tell us the total reach, you know, the weekly reach. Now, the weekly reach included, obviously, drive time in the morning and evening. But our programs were going out at 2 o'clock in the morning. And so, you know, we were probably reaching a tiny, tiny percentage of that total of people.
Hey, that's nothing. You know, Andy, for a long time, Radio Netherlands programs were airing on the CBC overnight service in Canada around 3 o'clock in the morning. And I ran some ratings charts about how many listeners the CBC overnight service has. And they said, depending on time of year, if there's holidays or anything, but a good night, somewhere between 2,000-3,000 people.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this is it. And yeah, if we asked them, they would send us, you know, they would send us, as I say, well, these are the figures for our weekly reach, and I some of the people, not everybody in Hilversum is capable of understanding international time zones, and I don't think everybody realized that we were going out at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. Program distribution did, and I did, and a few of the more savvy people. To some extent, you know, we had to pretend that we were reaching a lot more people because it looked good. In my opinion, the shortwave audience in North America for the last year of it being on shortwave was probably a few hundred, mm-hmm, at most. That's a, you know, the weekly reach, probably a few hundred.
But don't forget, but the thing is, Andy, you know, you Radio Netherlands wasn't even targeting North America. They were just listening to different transmission broadcasts to other areas.
No, I'm talking about the last year that we actually broadcast specifically to North America.
Oh, okay.
And what we did, now I said to them, if you want to find out how many people are listening, the last thing to do is send emails to DX clubs, because what the DX clubs do is they publish this stuff in their bulletin. They ask all the people who belong to a DX club to write and tell their friends to write and say, please don't go off the air, you know, we're listening to you. And I said, it's complete nonsense. I said, the way to do it is to broadcast announcements spasmodically over a period of say 6 weeks in different times in the transmission on different days of the week. So in the course of the 6 weeks, you know, we'll reach most of the people who are listening, hopefully two or three times. And we say, you know, it's important that you, if you're listening, you write to us and let us know. And I think in total, we got a few hundred letters, emails. So that was, you know, my findings were that we simply didn't have enough listeners to justify the cost of the transmissions.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it was something similar that I did and that I do occasionally on the shortwave, the programs that we have that go out on shortwave is in them there'll be a message that is cut out when we upload the show on the internet or when we distribute it on iTunes. And when I said that this is what I do, so I know if you're listening on shortwave or not, some people got so upset. Just a few weeks ago, we did a special two-hour program that went out to North America at the same time that Radio Netherlands did their farewell. And I had listeners writing in, and I'm thinking, and they, you know, they sent a SIMPO code, and they sent program information. Man spoke, woman spoke. Well, of course it's a man and a woman because I was co-hosting it with a woman, so I don't think it would be anybody else. So they were sending this stuff in, and then they'd say, perfect signal, I was blah, 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 listening to you here, there, and the other, and they were in Europe. And I went, wait a second, how the hell did you pick up a 50 kilowatt, not even targeting your area, with an all four SIMPO code? And then after I realized, because they mentioned something in their little details of the program that only was heard online and didn't go out on air.
Yes, I mean, you can. There are ways of catching people out, and I think it's, you know, I don't know why they do this, but I presume that some DXs, you know, is preserving their own hobby, but to the broadcasters, it's very, very irritating when people don't tell us the truth. If they tell us they're not listening and they tell us why they're not listening, we don't like your programs, or we don't listen to shortwave anymore, it's much more helpful than somebody who pretends to be a regular listener. We had, when the Media Network radio show ended, 2 years later, we still had people writing to us claiming they listened every week.
You know what that reminds me of? You know, when I brought Happy Station back in 2009, I got these letters from people saying, oh, I have been listening to you hosting the show for 15 years. And I sent these to Tom, and I had Tom come on the show. And I said, Tom, let me ask you a question. When did you leave Happy Station? When did the show leave? And it came back in 2009. So I'd like to know, were the people listening for the past 15 years, that they have, like, you know, a radio from an H.G. Wells novel that was able to tune into futuristic broadcasting? Because how the hell can you be listening to me for 15 years doing this show if I'd only been doing it for about a year? And then you read on, and it's like, oh, please send me this, that, and the other. But, no, you know, I wonder, like, do they really think that we're that stupid?
Well, I mean, I know who I think is stupid, and it's not the broadcasters. But unfortunately, you know, I think there probably are some broadcasters, some international broadcasters, I won't mention any names, which don't really understand how all this works, and probably, you know, take it as the gospel truth when people write and say they're listening. And you know, I find that rather sad. I mean, I remember years and years ago, this must have been in the 1990s, reading somewhere that All India Radio admitted that some of its language services only got two or three letters a month, and yet they still stayed on the air, you know, because presumably they just so were assuming that all the people who listened to them, you know, 20 years previously were still listening. The fact that some, you know, half of them had died was they didn't take into account.
But you know, Andy, one of the things about international broadcasting that is difficult, of course, to place is how many people listen. Now, if I think, for example, the 2 hours a week that we have broadcasting to East Africa, we have received a few letters. But I spoke to an NGO on the ground, and he said, you know, the thing is, he said, he knows and he's met people that have listened to us, but they can't afford to send us a letter.
Yes, yes.
The stamp is too much. They you know, and to go to an internet cafe is too expensive. So, you know, we know that we have listeners. He's sent me pictures of listeners that he's met when they were there. And he, you know, it was funny because he met listeners that we have. They gave him letters. He was collecting letters from listeners that we have because they couldn't afford to mail the stamps.
Yes, I mean, we used to have a mailing address at a post office box in India for people who could send letters at a local rate, which were then bulk transported to Hilversum. So there are ways around that. I think you're right. I think there are, in certain parts of the world, a lot of people are listening who are not able to contact the station. But I mean, that's part of the job I did in research in the strategy department, is to find all that sort of thing out, and so we could you know, make estimates of how many people were probably listening, and it is only a rough estimate, but you know, I'm fairly confident that my view that there were only a few hundred shortwave listeners left in North America was correct, and you know, other stations have told us the same thing, that their own correspondence, emails and letters from North America and Europe, you know, had dropped dramatically.
And that was another part of our conversation with Andy Sennett. On a future edition of the program, we'll bring you another excerpt. I mean, it was very long. We can't bring you the whole thing, but somebody suggested to us that once we air the interview in parts, why don't we upload the whole thing unedited? And we will be doing that, and I'll keep you informed when we are going to do that. Moving now for a kind of an interesting little contest that we have running on the program. Last week we did the first one, and that was our Be a Media Network Plus receiver reviewer. Now, we already sent out two receivers, and we had Chris Frietis on the program last week to talk about the receiver that he received. And very soon, we're trying to arrange it right now, we're going to be joined by Pedro Turner, all the way in Portugal, so he can give us a review on the radio that he got. Now, you can still enter. You can still enter any time. We still have a lot of receivers that we're going to be sending out, so do get in touch with us. Now, this is how it's going to work. First of all, we're going to send you a radio. To be honest, I am not even going to know what it is. We tell the distributor, look, send one out to this guy. Some people are saying, what happens if I get a piece of rubbish? Well, that's sort of the luck of the draw. We have no control over that. But we told the distributor, make sure that you don't send out something that's really bad. Play with it for a while after you get it. And then we're going to call you up and ask you what you think about it. The conversation will be anywhere between 8 to 10 minutes. And the nice part, of course, is you can keep the receiver. Unless it's really bad. Now, what do you have to do if you want to enter? Well, it's as easy as counting to 1, 2, 3. That's if you can count. just send us an email, mnp@pcjmedia.com. That's mnp@pcjmedia.com. Include your name, how long you've been an SWL or DXer, what some of your favorite stations are, and what you currently listen with. Also include your name, address, phone number, and the best time to call you, and put that in UTC. And let us know, of course, if you also have Skype, because we can also do it that way. We have a couple that came in. Well, actually, not too many. Only one. Not a couple, only one. Somebody said, I've been listening for 3 years, and I'd like to review a receiver. That's all they wrote. No name, no address, nothing. And we responded back with their email asking for a few more details. That was 3 weeks ago. We never heard back from them. So if you're listening right now, do get back to us. Very odd indeed. You're listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International, heard on the World Radio Network, Sky Digital, and Sirius XM. Now, what is HF propagation going to be like over the next few days? Well, we're now joined by our propagation guru, Dan Hensley.
Here's propagation for the week from March 9th to March 15th, 2013. A 10.7 centimeter flux on March 9th of 105, dropping down to 100 from March 10th to March 14th. On March 15th, a 10.7 centimeter flux of 95. The A index is 5 for the first 3 days of this week. That's March 9th, 10th, and 11th, dropping down to 8 on March 12th and 13th, down to 5 on March 14th and 15th. The KP index is stable at 2 for the first 3 days of the week, March 9th through 11th, and then on March 12th and 13th, the KP index of 3, dropping down to 2 on March 14th and 15th. An active region on the far side of the sun exploded during the early hours of March 5, 2013, hurling a bright coronal mass ejection into space. Cameras on board the Solar and Heliospheric Observatory, SOHO, recorded the expanding cloud. NASA's stereo behind spacecraft is stationed over the far side of the sun, directly above the blast site. An extreme UV telescope on board the spacecraft recorded a movie of the explosion. The responsible active region will rotate onto the Earth's side of the Sun in less than 1 week, which means geo-effective solar activity is in the offing. Sunspots have returned since last week, and we now have sunspots 1682 and 1686 almost right on top of each other to the Sun's eastern edge as they rotate out of view. 1683 close to 1685 and 88, with 85 and 88 just about on top of each other, followed by 1689 and 1687 on the Sun's western field, well separated from each other. Solar wind flowing from two indicated coronal holes will have reached Earth between March 7th and 9th. Back to you, Keith.
All right, thank you very much, Dan Hensley. Before we go, I want to play a little clip for you of something that is really strange. As you know, North Korea has been in the news this week, so I took the opportunity to listen to The Voice of Korea on a few occasions, which is a good comedy show to listen to. And I heard something which has got to be the strangest thing that I've ever heard in my life. It's a song called Our General is the Best. Now, listen to a few seconds of it, and then you'll understand why it's so funny. Our General is the Best from Voice of Korea, recorded March 8th at 4:25 UTC on 15180 kHz. It sounds as if James Last headed to North Korea and did some arrangements for them. Very odd indeed. Anyway, we've come to the end of the program. If you wish to contact us and let us know what you think, our email address is mnp@pcjmedia.com. That's mnp@pcjmedia.com. You can listen to this program again as well as all past editions by going to our website, www.pcjmedia.com/Media Network Plus, all one word. And we're going to leave you today with a little bit of James Last with something called Happy Luxembourg. Yes. On behalf of vacationing Paulette McQuarrie and Dan Hensley, this is Keith Pallon wishing you well. 73s to you all, 88s to the ladies. We'll see you in 7 days.